case is number 09-3063, Woodwork, against Department of the Navy. Mr. DeMilfi.
May it please the court, my name is Frank DeMilfi. I'm here representing petitioner, Mr. Kenneth Woodwork. As we know, this is the second time that we've been before this court in this particular issue, in this particular case. But however, on appeal, we have a very narrow issue. And we're here to determine whether or not Mr. Woodward's protected activity was a factor in the agency's decision not to extend his overseas duty was supported by substantial evidence by the board. It's clear after reviewing the evidence in this case that the board's decision is not supported by substantial evidence. As we know, an employee who wants to demonstrate that...
Actually, just maybe I can focus your argument.
Yes, ma'am.
It seems to me that you're really asking us to rewrite the evidence in this case. Your credibility determinations, I mean, your argument isn't that the AJ didn't consider the evidence. You're just different with the conclusions the agency came to having listened to the testimony and evaluated the testimony. Am I right about that?
In essence, there is a harmful error here. The AJ, in his decision, didn't consider all the evidence that was available in the particular case. And not all, and this has to consider every single piece of evidence, but he has to at least resolve the particular evidence that goes contrary to his particular determination.
Are you talking about the email here?
Yes, the electronic...
Is there any other evidence that you think...
Yes.
The AJ ignored other
yes,
things?
Yes. There was evidence on... I guess regarding the process of extending return rights. And that process was taken, basically there was a 6 to 8 month period where the agency, before these return rights expired, the agency would begin the process of returning these and discussing these return rights and determining what they were going to do. The agency didn't identify any particular evidence that suggested that they were actually going to extend Mr. Woodworth's return rights. Essentially, during this time period, there was inaction by the agency, which supports the conclusion that they were going to actually not extend his return rights, and that essentially that Mr. Woodworth was advised by his first-line supervisor at the time that
This is all, you know, some testimony here, some remarks there. Your contention was the decision was made in October. Their contention was made in December.
Right.
You're asking us to reweigh all of the evidence to reach a different result than the AJ. I guess I'm just not seeing. I mean, you agree there was significant evidence on the side of the government here in terms of testimony, you know.
Right. I don't necessarily agree with that. The only evidence that I see in this case is that Mr. Woodworth had eventually exercised his return rights. However, if you look at the statements made by the agency, they had convenient lapses of memory. The judge can't sit there and say at one point and say, all right, I'm going to believe this particular witness's testimony because it was straightforward. But at the same time, every time they are asked a question about, a particular issue that's contrary to their position, they can't remember. And the agency hasn't really proffered any sort of...
Well, the problem for you, I think, is that's their job and not our job. You're asking us to sit back here to read the entire transcript, to put ourselves in. I mean, how are we to assess whether you think they shouldn't have credited this person because other times they can, in your view, they conveniently forgot? How are we supposed to do that? You're on appeal.
Right.
To second guess the agency's conclusions with regard to those matters.
Right, and I understand that completely, but I think what it comes down to is this electronic mail message. In that it's document evidence. The judge didn't address the electronic mail message. If he were to resolve that and said, fine.
Evidence of what?
Of the decision being made by the first line supervisor that they weren't going to extend these return rights.
Well, I guess maybe I'm reading the email differently. Why can't we view the email as just a prediction by the first line supervisor that your client would assert a baseless whistleblower claim if one of several courses of action were taken? Why does it say anything more than that?
I think what we're looking at here is that the decision was made and that they were trying to manage how they were going to respond to his potential claim, and they were well aware.
The decision was made by whom? You said the email involved the comments by his first line supervisor. He was not the decision maker.
Right, and his second line.
The decision maker was Colonel Armstrong.
Right.
So he wasn't implicated in the statement made in the email, correct?
Well, I think this was a discussion between the two, the second line supervisor and the first line supervisor, essentially following whatever the first line supervisor's recommendation it may be. It's clear from the electronic mail message.
I can't understand that. What's in the email? When Colonel Armstrong didn't say anything in the email about having made a decision.
Right. Well, the email essentially, I think if you look back at it, what the email is doing is it's assessing this risk. And if you read between the lines of what the actual, the base of this electronic mail message was actually sent, the reason it was weighing the particular benefits, or I guess the cost-benefit analysis between, and not extending
Who
and extending.
The first line. So
first line and second
not
line.
Not the second. Okay, you read it as being Colonel Armstrong
weighing
the pros and cons?
I view it as him advising the colonel as to what sort of action is appropriate to take, and that the colonel would just essentially, that this action would be taken and that it would move forward on whatever his recommendation may be. It's
how do we know that? I mean, that's an inference you're drawing. There's
right.
documentary evidence to support. There's something in the email that says, and I know that you're going to accept this because you'll accept it just at face value, and the Colonel Armstrong says, yes, you're right about that. I mean, the email doesn't indicate anything of the sort, right?
Well, it doesn't necessarily indicate that he would make that decision, but I think reading between the lines of the electronic mail message, it's clear that they've already made this decision, and they were just weighing, okay, how can we affect this action and insulate ourselves from liability? I think that's what the email demonstrates, and that's what needs to be resolved. If the AJ...
The email doesn't demonstrate that. You just said that that's what we ought to conclude by reading between the lines.
Right, and that's...
Which is not what the... I mean, by definition, if you read between the lines, it's not the language of the email that we're reading.
Right.
The inference was wrong.
Right. And that's essentially the issue in this case, is that if the judge were to resolve this email and resolve this issue, then the credibility, would just be a credibility standard. But his failure to really look at and weigh all these particular issues, the lack of the agency's inaction for several months, this electronic mail message, which is just out there, as evidence contrary to his particular findings, the fact that the witnesses had convenient memory lapses, all these issues that tend to run contrary and are evidence contrary to his determination, he hasn't resolved. His decision was a scant 6 pages that really didn't address any of these particular issues. If you were to make a decision on that particular basis and resolve those issues, we wouldn't be before this court today. But because he failed to essentially resolve these issues, that's really why there's a substantial harmful error in here, and that there's really no reason to really believe the agency's version of events versus Mr. Wilbur's versions of the events. The AJ's decision, looking back at it again, also points to a myriad of other factors that would support the intent of Mr. Woodward. And these particular factors are in no way really relevant to these proceedings. There was no evidence that Mr. Woodward disclosed his particular intentions regarding his family life, his son, or any along these issues, that essentially, that these were factors that he actually demonstrated to the agency. And that was actually the reason why that Mr. Woodworth exercised his return rights. So again, even looking at Mr. Woodworth's credibility determination, the judge strikes at that as well, and there's really no basis for that as well either. He also questions Mr. Woodworth's his failure to confirm this yes or no, this no response that he received. That's completely not in line with the exact processes that are taken with the agency in this particular situation. Again,
how clear do you believe it is on the record that he would have been extended but for all of this interaction and exchange discussion?
Right. Well, I think that's the issue. There's another issue in the case that wasn't necessarily supported by the AJ's determination. There was no Mr. Woodworth's length of time in that he was spent overseas was not unusual. It was not abnormally long. This was it was longer, but it was not the unusual case in the situation. Additionally, there was no indication by his home base that they weren't going to extend his duty at that time in December. And the agency in the past has come to Mr. Woodworth and has extended his return rights prior to receiving notification from the home base. So with these factors, it's pretty clear that essentially the return rights were essentially unknown. And that we don't really know what sort of action could be taken based on Mr. Woodworth's eventual exercise of his return rights.
Well, that's the dilemma, isn't it?
Yes.
Here we have someone who on the record shows a sort of unhappiness, discontent with the appointment, and interest in returning home. And then when the choice is no longer available, complains.
Right.
He needs to make a pretty good case that he was entitled to stay, expected to stay, that his work was superior. I don't know if that's an issue. I think there was no concern about the quality of his performance. But it's very hard to find some place where he was entitled to feel that he was entitled to a reappointment.
Right. And you are correct in that there was no issue with his performance. There was really, when you get back to his unhappiness, he characterized it as harassment with his first line supervisor. So, I think he was looking for a remedy for the issue that he raised, and he was very, concerned with affecting this remedy. But that by no means could be, could be construed as a determination that he wanted to exercise his return rights and return home.
What remedy is he seeking in this case?
I'm sorry, in the whistleblower case or in this current
case?
We would request that, it be overruled, but in the same notion, remand either for further consideration by the AJ to resolve these issues that are outstanding.
But what if he wins? I mean, if he were to prevail, what's the relief in this case?
I think he's still very concerned that he hasn't been returned, that he was forced to return back to, the U.S. before he was ready.
Is he seeking to go back there for another term at this stage of the game?
At this point, it's not clear the action being taken in 2000. I think he's just looking to recover his particular losses between the 2000 and this time period. It's almost 10 years since the action has been taken. So it's really hard for him to articulate what sort of issues that he's corrected.
Is there any discrepancy in pay or benefits? Is that what he's seeing? The difference through the period?
My understanding is that I'm not 100% sure, and I do apologize, but my understanding there is a discrepancy with some of his pay and his issues. That's what he's seeking to recover, and also to see corrective action on, to have some, he's pursuing the action mostly on the whistleblower, but he's also been pursuing the whistleblower action as well, and seeking someone to really correct that particular action and remedy his concerns. So, I think that's what he's seeking in terms of relief in the situation.
Let's hear from the government.
Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Duhovne. Ms. Stern.
Hey, please report. Mr. Woodworth has not and cannot show that the board's decision is unsupported by substantial evidence. It is clear that what he is seeking to have this court do is to re-weigh the evidence, particularly with respect to the question of when the agency made its decision not to extend his overseas tour of duty and whether that decision was made before or after Mr. Woodworth voluntarily indicated his intention to exercise his return rights. Several agency witnesses, including the decision maker in this case, Colonel Armstrong, testified before the administrative judge that the agency's decision was made only after Mr. Woodworth voluntarily decided to exercise his return rights. And the administrative judge, who heard and saw those witnesses, found their testimony credible. Mr. Woodworth has failed to present anything that would justify disturbing those credibility determinations. The board's determination is also supported by documentary evidence in the record. For example, the email dated December 21st from Colonel Armstrong indicating that he does agree Mr. Woodworth Mr. Woodworth's tour of duty should not be extended. The date of that email, of course, is after Mr. Woodworth's December 18th statement that he would like to exercise his return rights. There's also documentary evidence in the record consisting of a memorandum signed by Colonel Armstrong, also dated December 21st, where he concurs in the request of Mr. Rita not to extend Mr. Woodworth's overseas tour of duty. And finally, there is further documentary evidence of a series of emails that begin in late December 2000 and continue into early January 2001 between apparently administrative folks in Japan and those in California asking whether California is going to renew Mr. Woodworth's return rights and indicating that a final decision as to the extension of his overseas tour of duty will to some extent depend on that decision, and then the decision by the California officials not to extend Mr. Woodworth's return rights. So there is certainly substantial evidence in the record to support the board's decision regarding when the agency made this decision, the fact that it was after Mr. Woodworth decided to exercise his return rights, and therefore that this was not an instance of whistleblower retaliation.
The email's a little suspicious, right? I mean, they're sort of predicting the potential whistleblower complaint before it happens, which kind of suggests that they have a sense that there was at least a potential allegation of whistleblowing.
I think there was a sense there was a potential for Mr. Woodworth to raise a whistleblower claim. I think that's clearly what Mr. Rita is referring to in the last paragraph of his email on appendix page 56 in our appendix. But that comes at the end of a long list of explanations as to why Mr. Rita is recommending against extending Mr. Woodworth's overseas tour of duty. And he recites a number of reasons, including the length of time that Mr. Woodworth has been there, 9 years, which is, he says, long, not a record, but very long. He also remarks that Mr. Woodworth is not happy there, that he's having a deleterious effect on morale, that after polling division heads within his division, all of them voted against extending Mr. Woodworth's tour of duty. So it's only after he recites a number of reasons that he feels that he would recommend extending Mr. Woodworth's tour of duty, that at the end he says, and if we do this, I recognize that it's possible he'll raise a retaliation claim. I don't think he'll be successful. In Colonel Armstrong's response, he doesn't really address that aspect at all. He's a little bit concerned with the timing of why the agency in Japan appears to have to make their decision. According to Mr. Rita, they have to make their decision before California makes their determination about renewing Mr. Woodworth's return rights. He has some concerns about that and wants to clear that up, and apparently doesn't make a decision at that point. It's not until a few days later, on December 21st, almost a week later, I guess, that he responds with an email again to Mr. Rita's recommendation saying, I concur with your recommendation. But by that time, Mr. Woodworth has already indicated that he wishes to exercise his return rights. Mr. Rita informs Colonel Armstrong of that, and in light of that, Colonel Armstrong responds, then I agree that we should not extend his overseas tour of duty, but I'll go to bat and try to get his on-base housing extended at least until the end of his current tour of duty. So again, it's clear that substantial evidence is in the record to support the board's decision, and that what Mr. Woodworth is really asking this court to do is to simply reweigh that evidence, which of course is not the job of this court.
You see a remedy, even if you were to win? What is the whole point of this?
Well,
what you get out of it if you fail? This was not an adverse action.
Exactly right.
It claims that, but it's not on the, it doesn't appear on the paper, on the record.
That's right. I want to mention that it is in the record that he was returned to his position in California at the same grade of pay that he had enjoyed when he was in Japan, so I don't even think there was any reduction in benefits. He challenged the action, the personnel action, of not extending his overseas tour of duty, so presumably the only remedy he could get would be an extension of that tour of duty, but it's not unusual in cases like this where so much time has gone by that that would require some reconstruction on the part of the agency and inquiry whether Mr. Woodworth would still be interested at this point, even in going back to Japan. So You know, in cases like this where so much time has gone by, it's very difficult to say.
In most cases, can't be actually remedied. It can be remedied by compensation.
By back pay, yes.
Back pay and all that, but apparently that wouldn't be a... that's not an issue here either, because you got the same thing.
That's exactly, Your Honor.
Overseas pay or whatever, but that's to compensate for being overseas. So that's not... So I don't understand what the piece of controversy is here.
Right. It just the, I guess, recognition that he would be seeking that he was, in fact, subject to whistleblower retaliation, if the court found.
The government didn't raise this point, did you, by motion or whatever, as the case was proceeding through this court?
Did we raise the point that there would be no remedy? Is that the question, Your Honor?
That is, in fact, what sort of adverse action is this?
Well, the question of whether it was a personnel action, a covered personnel action for purposes of the Whistleblower Protection Act, the board found that not extending his overseas tour of duty did qualify as a personnel action for purposes of the Whistleblower Protection Act, and the agency did not challenge that below, and we have not challenged that on appeal. So it's not a traditional adverse action, but it doesn't need to be for purposes of the Whistleblower Protection Act. It only needs to be a covered personnel action.
An action without remedy other than what, restoration, if things had moved faster than the many years that this took?
Exactly right, Your Honor. The remedy would be to extend his tour of duty. And whether that could be accomplished at this late date and whether Mr. Woodward would even want to return, that's a separate question, which of course I can't answer whether he would want to return. But hypothetically, if the court reversed the board and the board and the ultimate finding was that Mr. Woodward was subjected to retaliation, then presumably the remedy would be to extend his overseas tour of duty. But as a practical matter, it's difficult to understand exactly how that would be made to happen, but that would be the remedy. Whether it could be in practice effective, I'm not sure.
Okay. Any more questions?
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Green. Mr. DeMelfi, you have a couple of minutes.
I asked a question just a minute ago.
Sure.
I didn't get it from your answer when you were asked. Can you be a little more clear as to what it is you would get by winning this game?
Well, I think that's something that's best handled on remand. If he were to, you know, there was no issue as to what, you know, his particular damages were. There should be there was a damage hearing and a further testimony in that particular avenue in that aspect. We can determine what sort of, you know, difference in pay there was, what sort of issues he may have had, what sort of harm he has suffered from having his duty cut short in the in Japan and having to be moved back here to the agency's employed stateside. So as to what he would receive, what sort of remedy he would have, I mean, that I think that needs further testimony and further discovery.
Well, I was asking what you were asking for, what he should have.
You're asking
what do you think he should get? What would ideally he get as a remedy?
I think, you know, again, and I think he should...
What he would ask for, I don't know how to put it. I realize the board would have to decide and all that, but
right.
What he would want.
Mr. Woodworth is, you know, seeking to be made whole on this particular issue. So, you know, he's looking forward to recover his, you know, actual damages in differences to what those are. Those, you know, that's going to have to be something that's going to have to be articulated by him to the board and for, you know, further consideration. You know, he's harmed by having his duty set cut short. He's been sent, you know, he was enjoyed his position in Japan. He had been there for several years, and he had a home and a house there, and that's where he lived, that's where he made his home. He had been cut short and sent back to the United States, essentially against his will, according to his position. And, you know, there's issues for him to explore there, and that's, you know, I haven't really discussed with my clients whether or not he would be wanted to actually go back to Japan. That could be within his particular determination. He enjoyed that area.
Okay, I want to use all your time here.
Okay, I have nothing further. I think we've stated everything on the. There's nothing further for the board.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. DeMelfi and Mr. The case is taken under submission.